Jesse Corcoran Podcast.
I learned about this morning. This is referring to the a major U.S. Daily's story about subliminal messages. I don't think we need to be subliminal about the differences between our views on prescription drugs. You know, the idea of putting subliminal messages in the ads is ridiculous. You talk about subliminal.
Our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we. This mighty nation will not blink.
I can assure you, I am not going to blink. Either we defend freedom so that our children and grandchildren can grow up in a peaceful world, or we blink. And if we blink, the rest of the world will blink as well.
That's exactly what I wanted to ask you about, because James Baker says that he's looking for something between cut and run and stay the course.
Listen, we've never been stay the course, George.
This country will stay the course.
We'll stay the course until the job is done.
We will stay the course.
Listen, we've never been stay the course, George.
We'll stay the course in Iraq.
We'll stay the course. We'll stay the course.
Listen, we've never been stay the course, George.
We're just going to stay the course. My message is that we will stay the course.
Listen, we've never been stay the course, George.
And so, in my speech to the nation, whatever you want to call it, speech to the nation. I know the human being and fish can coexist peacefully. And America needs a military where our best and brightest are proud to serve and proud to stay. If you're a single mother with two children, which is the toughest job in America as far as I'm concerned, and you're working hard to put food on your family, rarely is the question asked, is our children learning?
Too many good docs are getting out of business. Too many OBGYNs aren't able to practice their love with women all across this country. See, I don't think you can be.
There's an old saying in Tennessee, I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on you. If you fool me, you can't get fooled again.
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
Tuesday, April 4th, 2023. You are at jconline.com. How you doing, kids? It had been a long time since I played those or even heard them. And if you're like, well, this is Trump's big day, why are you playing all the W stuff? I don't know. It's just there's something amusing to me about big shot officials, whether they're political guys, corporate guys, sports figures, owners, you know, anybody who's sort of on the hot seat trying to not look like they're on the hot seat. And the harder they try to make it look like they're not nervous, they might not look like it, but they say and do things that just, I mean, you just fall off your chair, you know, put food on your family, you know, that sort of stuff. And again, in their defense, especially during campaigning, you know, where you're hitting like, I don't know, like 11 cities in one day, and you know, just catch a little nap on the train or on the plane, and then they wake you up and they push you out there again. I take a nap most afternoons, and when I wake up from that nap, I don't even know what day it is. And sometimes I really do have to think about where I am. So if you ever saw the movie with Robert Redford that was made way back in the early 70s called The Candidate, which is a fantastic movie. by the way. You know, you just wake up. You don't even know where you are. So now you go out there making speeches and you say things like, you know, it's difficult to put food on your family. That having been said, you could probably put together a reel of stuff like that with any president ever. You know, they've all gone out there and said something absolutely ridiculous. You know, in trying to sound completely legitimate, they make a mistake and it just makes it even that much more funny. The difference is that it was so much easier with W because he was doing it all the time. And it's so much easier with Trump because we know, I mean, from independent observers, you know, people who have no dog in the fight, they're just sitting there keeping track of what's said and oftentimes matching that up to what they said they were going to say, and it doesn't come out the same. And you know, it's like, what did he lie? Like, I always forget, is it 3,000 or 30,000 lies that Trump has told in the last, 6 years? Really? And does it matter? Because once you go over like 1,000, does it matter whether it's 3 or 30? So I don't even know. I don't know if it's 3,000 lies or 30,000. All I know, it's a lot. You know, the action, as we saw yesterday, where, you know, you just watch for hours, you watch a plane. It's like Seth Meyers said last night. It's like we're watching the first launch of the space shuttle or something. It's like, no, it's an airplane taking off from Florida and going to New York, and then they land it and the whole thing. And you're watching hours of a plane in the air or on the ground, for that matter. And then there's like 2 seconds of Donald Trump from a telephoto lens somewhere in a helicopter, and that's what we spent our day doing yesterday. So now, at least today, for me, the most interesting part of this is that they're going to read the actual indictments, and there's 34. Actually, I guess technically it should be not the indictments, it's the charges within the actual indictment, but there's 34 of them, and, you know, I think it's safe to say that we're going to have some surprises. I mean, for one thing, you're going to hear about people who maybe you didn't think were going to be the kind of folks who would say something that is really unpleasant about Donald Trump. Maybe somebody from his own party, maybe a bunch of people from his own party. But that's going to happen today, too. And you sit there and you imagine guys like Mike Pence. Mike Pence, you know, he sort of alluded to this once before, but remember during the January 6th thing? And they're like, okay, we got to get you out of here. Hop in this limo and we're going to take you away. And Pence was so freaked out by what was happening. And like a scene out of the Godfather movies, Pence is thinking to himself, I'm going to get in that car and nobody will ever find the body. He was really seriously freaked that they were going to do something to him, that they were going to take him away and kill him or do something like that. And he refused to get in the car, which is, you know, what I tell every woman in my life, you know, that I've ever had. I said, you know, for ever some sort of situation where you're carjacked or there's a kidnapping attempt or somebody's just trying to rob you or whatever, for God's sakes, whatever you do, don't get in the car. Let them shoot you right there in the parking lot. You're better off, because if you're taken to a secondary location, I can almost guarantee you it's going to be the worst possible way that you can go out. So you might as well just go out right here. Don't ever get in that car. And Pence stood there and looked at the car and said, I'll pass. I'll grab an Uber. So then he goes running back into the Capitol building and sitting there with the door closed, just talking to anybody who will talk to him, who he thinks he can trust. You know, man, I would have loved to have been a fly on the hair of Mike Pence listening to what was going on in that conversation. Good morning, everybody. So the proceedings will take place in a couple of hours, and then they're going to have a news conference. The actual prosecutors involved in this thing will have a news conference explaining what just happened, and then you'll have hours and hours of analysis on it on the 24-hour cable stations. And then tonight, Trump goes into primetime, and he holds his own news conference or statement or something like that. So that's how the whole thing is supposed to play out. While that's going on, we're at least happy, I think we're happy to say, that the severe weather that has been predicted for a couple of days now is going to hold off until overnight. I was actually very concerned about the baseball game tonight, and it turns out the baseball game should be played with no trouble. It's only going to go into extra innings or something, because apparently everything that's coming through the time change has been established here, and instead of this all happening late this afternoon and into this evening and overnight, apparently it's not even going to start until overnight. So there's good and bad in that, but it's not supposed to start until overnight. It'll probably be storming at this time tomorrow morning, and then it'll finally clear out, and then the Cardinals have a day game tomorrow. So we'll see how that whole thing shakes out. But we're in almost an identical situation that we saw on Thursday night and Friday, where a giant, giant clump of supercells is about 200, will pass, shall we say, about 200 miles north of St. Louis, and then maybe 150, 200 miles south of St. Louis, another one. And we're sort of stuck in the middle. And that thing, that whole cell system that went through on Thursday and then Friday as it traversed the southern part of the country, produced 100 tornadoes. 100. And like I said, what's coming through overnight could be just as bad. So you just got to wait this whole thing out. And while all of this stuff is going on this evening and tonight, I will be in a movie theater seeing Air. This is the Matt Damon movie directed by Ben Affleck, who's also in it, about the guys who invented the Air Jordan basketball shoes. And so that is going to, you see Matt Damon, you see Ben Affleck, and you're like, okay, all right. These guys do good work. You know, they got a history of doing really, really good work. The problem is that this movie is being released in early April, which is a traditional dumping ground for bad movies. There's a couple of dead times. There's a couple of dead times in the calendar year, and this is one of them. August and September are dead times. You know, you don't release a movie that you think is going to really do well at the box office, generally speaking, in August and September. It's a dead time. People are, you know, the kids are going back to school. The summer is over. People are transitioning to things like, you know, football practice, and all the new TV shows are on starting in the fall. Even if you put a really, really good movie out, chances are people are just too busy to work it into their schedule. So, like I said, there's a couple of times during the year. The period right after, well, here's what happens. So you have all that Oscar bait that comes out in generally late October. Big, big month for movies is November. And then you have the Christmas Day releases, which they screen for us usually in early December. So that's really, really hot times. Now you cross over to the first of the year, and there's a bunch of movies that you know, you have to show them in either New York or L.A. before the end of the calendar year for those movies to be eligible for Oscar consideration for that year. So a lot of times they'll open them in New York or L.A., but they won't come to a place like St. Louis until sometime during the month of January, because there's just too much overspill in the month of December. So you get those movies that are sort of left over that are eligible for the Oscar for that year. And then there's another really dead time, except they always find Kate Hudson or Jennifer Lopez, and they go, hey, look, we need a Valentine's Day movie, because, you know, everybody wants to take their honey to a movie around Valentine's Day, and so we need some Valentine's movies. So, like I said, you get the usual suspects, you make a couple Valentine's Day movies, you stick those in there in early February, and then things are dead as a doornail the rest of February, all of March, into April. And not really until you start approaching Memorial Day do you start seeing movies which the studios have some strong belief in. So, again, it's a long way of explaining. I'm not expecting the movie to be very good, even though I think it seems like a great story. And, you know, Ben Affleck knows what he's doing. Matt Damon, those guys know what they're doing. But, you know, sometimes you swing and you miss, and the studio says, okay, we're looking at an early April release. That's almost like saying, you guys got anything else that we can make this year that'll come out next year? So, you know, we'll see. Sometimes you can get surprised. Oh, wait a minute. Here's Kent on Channel 4.
Before we really get much going. So late tonight, maybe a cluster of storms moves through. Here comes the front, 6 a.m. and then on through the morning. You can see at 10 a.m. and noon. And then all of this moves on and we get into some drier weather. And there is a severe threat with these storms that's focused on late tonight and early tomorrow morning, a level 2 or 3 out of 5 across the area through tomorrow morning. And then from 7 a.m. on, as the storms exit the area, there's a little bit of a severe greater risk then as well. But again, very warm today, 83 the high. First alert weather days today and tomorrow because of the storm risk. Clear and 60 on Thursday.
Somebody asked me, you're going to open the Schnucks Panic Aisle. It's like, you don't buy bread and milk and eggs for thunderstorms. That's just snow. Anyhow, thank you, Kent. Speaking of movies, Disney making a live-action Moana with Dwayne Johnson returning as the demigod Maui. He'll also produce alongside the original voice of Moana. Scarlett Johansson says she can't have social media because her ego is too fragile and reading comments would give her anxiety. Oh, honey, don't you know it? But she also tried Instagram once and she said it wasted too much time. A Harry Potter TV series is in the works, and the new Fatal Attraction series that hits Paramount Plus this month actually brings the story 15 years into the future when Dan finishes serving a prison sentence for killing Alex and vows to prove his innocence. I love this story. You know, all I do is get bombarded with this DeSantis stuff, although it's interesting. It's interesting. There's a little sub-story going on, a little subplot, as Donald Trump continues to hog all of the attention, even though he's in a heap of trouble. And, you know, I mean, there's jail sentences involved in these things. There's felonies involved. But Ron DeSantis figures, okay, well, I'll just let Trump hang himself. I don't have to do or say much of anything. And instead, he's out there flapping his trap and he's going down in the ratings. And a lot of it appears to be traced to the whole Disney thing. People in this country love Disney shit. And if you're like anti-Mickey Mouse, well, that's not the way to make friends. So DeSantis has got all kinds of troubles. And now this whole drag queen thing. We want to protect the children. We have to protect the children. You know, they're all getting slaughtered in schools, and nobody's doing anything about the proliferation of assault rifles. And you always say that, we got to protect the children, not from guns, from drag shows. And I've heard this story before, but I had forgotten about it. One of the best stories Dolly Parton tells. Somebody said, we're going to enter you in a drag queen contest, but it's not just any drag queen contest. It's a Dolly Parton drag queen contest. So we're going to put you up there as one of the contestants, and we're going to see how you do. And she didn't win. There was somebody who looked more like Dolly Parton than Dolly Parton did, apparently. I love that story. When I was courting my first wife, she was still in school at Vanderbilt University in Nashville. And so I was always going to Nashville. This was in the mid to late 80s and into, well, and then, from about like 86 on, from 86 to 90. I was in Nashville a lot. And yes, I did stop the Barbara Mandrell 1 hour photo. Think about all those companies who put up all those little shacks and had, like, what was it, CPI photo? Is that what it was called? I know there was one in Crestwood Mall. And, you know, when I explained this to my daughter, that you had to, like, buy a roll of film, have a film camera, take the picture, and then take it to the drugstore or to, like, one of these photo places, have it developed. It would usually take a couple of days. Then they got it down to 1 hour. And you had to do all of this stuff and how much money it cost. And you really had to be careful what you were taking pictures of, because every time you snap that shutter, it cost you money. I mean, she just looks at me like, you're a caveman. But I tell her these stories. Can you imagine all those people who lost money on building 1 hour photo developing little outfits? Gosh, I hope Barbara Mandrell's got enough money left. Anyhow, but while I was in Nashville so often, there were all of these stories about Tanya Tucker. Tanya Tucker. Now, when I started my broadcast career in Rockford, Illinois in 1975, believe it or not, I worked at some bad radio stations. And one station I still remember had a Tanya Tucker song that I had to play. It was called San Antonio Stroll. And it had, what did it have? It had mandolins in it. I think it had some banjos. And then there was another song I still remember. It was called Lizzie and the Rain Man. Lizzie and the Rain Man. And I think Tanya Tucker was only about, 15 years old when she's doing these songs. Well, my career recovered and I moved on in life. But, you know, now I'm down in Nashville all the time. And on occasion, I would be at some bar and you'd see Tanya Tucker going by. And she just looked like she was 24/7 on the prowl. And the story was that, you know, you had all these thousands and thousands of young studly guys at Vanderbilt University with rich daddies and really, really nice cars. And she would just like sit there at the bar going, I'll take one of those and two of these and one of those. Who'd like to be first? Which, you know, if it was the other way around and it was a guy, that would be pretty much normal behavior. In fact, I might go so far as to say that's exactly what I would have done. Just sit there and go, I'm surrounded by like I always wanted to live when I was coming up in the business. I wanted to live in Madison, Wisconsin, because I had heard a long time ago. Well, first of all, you have the University of Wisconsin there. The male to female ratio is 3 girls for every boy, 3 women for every man in Madison, Wisconsin. I think it's still like that. Anyhow, why the hell am I talking about Tanya Tucker? Oh, because she and Patti Loveless are the 2023 inductees into the Country Music Hall of Fame. Now, somebody's got to come up with some sort of workable solution someday about how we're going to treat people who stand at concerts. You know, it was one thing when concert tickets were like $250. And everything was just sort of organic, and a lot of times you didn't have chairs, and you're just sitting on the ground, or just standing nonstop, or just, you know, just a very informal thing going back to the old Mississippi Riverfest days. But things are becoming more sophisticated and a hell of a lot more expensive. So now when you go to a concert and somebody starts to stand up in front of you, you're just saying to yourself, I just paid $600 for these two tickets. And I'm looking at this guy's back or this woman's back instead of what I'm supposed to be seeing, which is the band that I paid all this money to see. So it's not just standing. I mean, we're getting into the concert season again here very, very soon, you know, where there's going to be a concert a night out at Riverport. And you get these jerks who just want to ruin your life and are so inconsiderate and just so self-centered. And what do you do? So somebody came up with this list of things that you should not do that make you a jerk when you go to a concert. For example, outperforming the performer. Nobody came to hear you sing or to watch you dance. So pull it in, especially if somebody says, could you maybe, you know. Number two, shoving your way through. If you want to get the best spot, show up early. Number three, insulting the artist. This includes throwing things, trying to get on stage, or even booing. If you're not having fun, just shut up or just get back in the car and go home. Being on your phone, talking, texting, recording the show instead of, you know, maybe watching it. It's not just your fellow concert goers who are going to be annoyed. Artists don't like it either. They're trying to connect with you, okay? They're trying to connect with you. And I've been at shows where you can tell whenever they didn't like the song or they didn't recognize the song, suddenly it became, yeah. And usually, you know, like if you're going to talk at a concert, I mean, I'll at some point I will have a concert go, oh, this is the song where they do this here. Watch this, you know, or what do you think so far? Are you liking this or are you not liking this? Just, you know, having something like that. But I'm talking about like a full-fledged conversation that's going on for minutes. I will do the shoulder check, almost like you're going to do a lane change. You sort of look over your shoulder like it's a signal that I'm hearing you when I'm trying to hear the concert. And sometimes people will catch themselves and think, oh, I'm talking too loud. I'm talking too much. Maybe I ought to pull it in a little bit. And a lot of times it just exacerbates the whole situation. And then there's people who just get hammered and they're, you know, you're like, am I going to get puked on here? That's a good way to spend an evening, or just throwing food or spilling stuff all over the place. And then also, you know, there's, depending on the show, there's families there. So, you know, look around. See if there's any little kids. It's just a good idea to be aware of your surroundings anyhow. Just sort of look around. What do we got here? And these days, probably a good idea to spot the nearest usher, too, just in case you end up having trouble. It's a shame it's got to be that way, but I'm afraid it's that way. Somebody told me once, if you ever get called for jury duty, when they come to you and they start asking questions, just say something like, I can tell whether somebody's innocent or guilty just by looking at them. And they usually send you home. Well, it turns out a new survey found that the average person makes a first impression in 27 seconds. And about 1 in 3 people usually make first impressions in under 10 seconds. So what can you actually tell about somebody in just a few seconds? Well, you notice their appearance, but there are some other things too, like, you know, is the person smiling? Does the person seem to have good manners? Are they making eye contact? How are they dressed? Back in my single days, somebody told me a long time ago that, you know, you can just wear a sweatshirt and a pair of jeans or something. What you do, though, is you wear really, really expensive shoes. Shined. I don't know if that worked or not, but I did it. It seemed like it made sense. Because you sort of dress down, but then it comes to the shoes. It's like, this guy's dressed like a... Well, actually, he's not dressed like a slob. Those are pretty fucking expensive shoes right there. Okay, maybe I'll give this another look. Now, if you're interacting with a stranger, that first impression may be the only shot you get. There's going to be times when it's more impactful, like during a job interview or a date or meeting somebody important from the family or maybe a new family that you're having some sort of relationship with. But, you know, keep in mind that nobody makes a good impression 100% of the time. In the survey, the average person says they think they make a good impression about 45% of the time. Laura's dressed in pink. What the hell's the story now?
So for those of you who do have spring allergies, you are probably used to canceling plans because of them. Maybe you said, I can't make it to this outdoor birthday party. I don't want to go on a road trip because the majority of it then, once you get there, is going to be outside. Weddings, even job interviews. Do you guys have really bad allergies?
I wouldn't say I have bad, but I can feel.
This is fascinating stuff, isn't it? Wow. Maybe people don't want to come to your party, Laura, because they know you're going to just sit there and talk about the baby. All right. D. Snyder thinks MTV Unplugged destroyed metal in the 1990s. Well, it was just something that ran its course. You just had these songs that people knew, and now you're doing them in a different way. And then that sort of got old, and things, I thought, went back to normal. Not according to D. Taylor Swift's website is offering merchandise exchanges after people started complaining about the print fading on certain items. There's a company in St. Louis that used to print bumper stickers, and they looked really, really nice, and they did nice designs, and the price wasn't that high, and people in radio stations all over the country would do business with this outfit in St. Louis. And then one day, about 6 months after the bumper stickers had been distributed, they started getting complaints that all of the ink on the bumper stickers was fading. And let's just say you had white block lettering on a black background, which we did at DC 101 in Washington. All of a sudden, one day you look out there and you're looking at a white bumper sticker. The ink, the black ink just faded right off. And Christine McVie's cause of death was revealed to be a massive stroke caused by metastatic cancer. Average person's going to spend about $192 on Easter this year, and Consumer Reports is reminding parents that some Peeps contain a known carcinogen. It's the artificial coloring red dye number 3. Despite the warning, the FDA allows it, and it's in thousands of products. Oh, good. Here we go again with the argument as to whether or not pizza is an Italian food or an American food. The question is trending after a history professor in Italy said it's more American than Italian. He says America added tomato sauce, and that's why it's so popular now. A man in Delaware pleaded guilty to stealing the thumb of a 2,000-year-old Chinese sculpture. He broke it off during an ugly sweater party in 2017. The thumb alone is valued at an estimated $5,000. And according to a report of 182 cities, the healthiest place in America is San Francisco. The least healthy cities are all in the South. It was on this date in 1987. I was emceeing a show done by the then immensely popular Roseanne out of the Westport Playhouse. Interviewed her live on television. She was really, really pissed off because TWA lost her luggage, and she was complaining about the fact that she really, really was not happy about the state at that very moment of her underwear. You think I'm making that up? I'm not. This week back in 1989, my half-hour special, JC went to Cardinal Spring Training and all we got was this lousy TV show, aired on KSDK Channel 5 after the 10 o'clock Sunday evening news, ended up winning an Emmy. There was some actually pretty funny stuff in that show. We did a thing called Rappin' Redbirds. I went around at spring training at Alang Stadium in St. Petersburg, spring training back in 1989, and we wrote this rap thing. You know, I'm talking about white rap, and this is the 80s. Boy, we picked out people in the crowd that day to deliver lines. We got groups of people delivering lines. I got some of the players to deliver the lines. I still remember Terry Pendleton was one of the guys. Tom Herd was already gone. Who was it? Tom Bernanski, probably. But we had that in there. We had the original Hooters. We did a segment there. Everybody remember Tommy? Tommy, the vendor who would sing and throw hot dogs to the crowd. What a trip that guy was. Al Lang, by the way, is now a soccer stadium. The St. Petersburg soccer team, whatever they're called, they play in the place, and it's been refurbished and actually looks pretty nice. But that whole area, if you were one of the people who went to Cardinal Spring Training back in the day at in St. Petersburg, and you remember, the joke used to be the players hated the spring training facility because you had the Hilton Hotel directly across the street from the ballpark. You had the ballpark, and that was it. There was nothing else around there. 6 o'clock at night, you could hit pin drop in the streets because there was so little activity, nothing going on. Go there now. It looks like Midtown Manhattan. You wouldn't believe what they've done to the area down there. And I mean that in a good way. All right, so anyhow, the big story today is going to be the arraignment of one Mr. Donald Jessica Trump. Seth Meyers, what do you got?
Former President Trump is set tomorrow to be fingerprinted and photographed, and then the next step will be to sit back and see how many cold cases that solves. Chief, you're not going to believe this. We got news on the Westchester Strangler.
Not bad. Stephen Colbert, your turn.
Everyone on the right is outraged, and they have a dire warning for average citizens.
It's not even about Donald Trump. It's about every American, because if they can do it to Trump, they can do it to you.
With this indictment, I think it's an indictment on everybody in America. I mean, if it can happen to him, it can happen to you and I.
But if they can do this to Donald Trump, they can do it to you.
If this is what can happen to him, it can happen to anyone.
If they can do that, they can go after you and me.
It's true. If this indictment stands, then no one who has their fixer pay six figures in hush money to their porn star lover, then reimburses that fixer out of business accounts, then falsifies it as legal fees and conspires with the publisher of the National Enquirer to catch and kill stories about his other extramarital affairs as part of another illegal violation of campaign finance laws, will be safe. None of us.
Jimmy Fallon, take your shot.
And this is real. Marjorie Taylor Greene's interview on 60 Minutes was watched by 6.66 million people. Oh. And the devil was like, don't associate me with this.
And back to Colbert for what might not just be the clip of the day or the week or the month, but the clip of the year.
Fox News legal expert Brian Claypool tried to defend the former president, but didn't.
If this is such a tough case for him to make, why is he bringing it?
Well, I think there's no question about it that he wants to humiliate President Fraud or President Trump.
I believe that's called a Fraudian slip. Yeah, Bragg just wants to humiliate President Fraud. I mean, President Porn Sex. I mean, throw him in jail. I mean, my mom's boobs.
Donald Jessica Trump, you are currently the subject of multiple criminal investigations. Would you say that's hurting your campaign, or does anyone give a shit anymore?
Well, if you listen to the fake news media, it helps. Because they're all saying it's a scam. Even people that don't like me are saying this is a terrible thing to do for a country.
You mean Melania?
I don't know how you can talk about me when they don't talk about Joe Biden, because what he did is so bad.
Girl, you need to update your act. This is your comeback / indictment tour. People don't want to hear the same old songs.
I may have made a mistake.
MAGA is so 2016. What you need is a fresh campaign slogan.
Let's give it a shot.
Something catchy, you know, like your chlamydia, but that really also reminds people what you're all about. Pitch me some ideas.
So it's massive election interference.
That is catchy, but maybe too on the nose?
I have the right to take stuff.
Better, but it needs more oomph.
Russia, Russia.
Russia?
Russia.
You've done it. It's tired.
I mean, the people know me. I think that's why I'm blowing up during this hoax that's taking place in New York.
Honey, I think you're going down.
He was a sleazy showbiz phony born in NYC who somehow won the White House over Hillary. Then after one term got the sack. Biden pummeled his ass, but now he wants to come back. He's been indicted, though, and so he's making seams. He's the grumpy, trumpy felon from Jamaica in Queens. He met a lovely lady who performed on screen. She started yapping in 2016, and so he signed a bunch of checks.
I didn't do it.
Cause he's disgusting, and so he had to pay her for sex. Looks like a butternut squash, and his hair is bleached. He's the bloated orange lunatic who's twice been impeached. He was a sleazy showbiz phony born in NYC. Somehow won the White House over Hillary. Then after one term got the sack. Biden pummeled his ass, but now he wants to come back. He's been indicted though, and so he's making scenes. He's a bloated orange racketeering Putin loving piece of garbage chicken-livered bunker boy. His father never loved him, so he's damaged and a deadbeat phony lying insurrectionist with psychopathic tendencies. He's twice impeached, incompetent, a law-obstructing narcissistic, incoherent criminal, and grumpy Trumpy felon from Jamaica.
And if that doesn't set the stage for today's activities, I don't know what does. That's it. The J.C. Corcoran podcast for Tuesday, April 4th, 2023 is in the can. We're here every weekday morning at 11. We'll have some news on the new radio station here in a couple of days. In the meantime, watch out. Take this thing seriously overnight and into tomorrow morning. We'll be here at that time. In the meantime, you may reach me by email, jc at jcontheline.com, Facebook, The Showgram with J.C. Corcoran. Have a great day. In the meantime, beat this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.